This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning together with Philip C. 7:36 is a wet Monday on the 8th of August. And despite the gloomy outlook out there, it's 8 o'clock, 8.05. We're going to have a very fun conversation, right, Philip?
It will be, because I'm going to be speaking to Sim Chu Keng. He's the founder and executive chairman of Sim Leisure Group. And if you don't know who they are, perhaps you are familiar with some of their assets and properties, because they're currently the owners of Escape Parks and also recently acquired Lost Making Kidzania in KL from Khazanah and Bausted. So I'm going to be speaking to founder and executive chairman Sim Chu Keng as he shares with us how the leisure industry is doing now and the business of designing fun and why he's advocating against roller coasters.
He doesn't like roller coasters?
He hates them.
I thought the only thing that he won't like about it is the up and down that might happen to his share price, because he's actually listed on the Singapore Stock Exchange. But do tune in. That's going to be happening after the 8am news bulletin. But in the meantime, let's talk about the ASEAN conference ministers, because it's a series of meetings that's happening now in Phnom Penh that have gathered foreign ministers of ASEAN as well as top-ranking officials from the US, China, Russia and Japan. And this is the first such in-person meeting since the beginning of the pandemic. And one significant outcome was the decision to bar Myanmar's ruling generals from ASEAN meetings until they make progress on the five-point consensus,
which is a 15-month-old plan that was agreed upon with the Myanmar leaders to address the crisis triggered by the military coup. While they remain united on Myanmar, the same was not observed when it comes to tensions in Taiwan. Chair of the meeting, Cambodia's foreign minister, said that discussions over the issues were lively and included some strong arguments, but it was better if disputes were handled with words. I wonder if they were not words, what were they?
I don't know. What words were they? Sticks and stones.
Sticks and stones or hands or slaps. Considering that ASEAN as a bloc is more known for its diplomacy and gentle approach to issues, were there any significant outcomes then?
For some answers, we speak to Izzah Ibrahim, analyst and at Foreign Policy and Security Studies Program at ISIS Malaysia. Good morning, Izzah. Now, what were the significant key takeaways from the meeting of the foreign ministers? Did you observe anything from this 29-page communique that was issued?
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me. For one of the significant outcomes it listed in the communique was quite broad-reaching as well, because they cover, they touch upon quite a large number of areas as well of both regional and global importance. But as a general overview, most of it was highlighting the aspirations for the region and how would they aim to further connect themselves both socially, culturally, and economically. This was quite noticeable through their declarations of their ASEAN community vision in 2025. And how they want to tie that as well with their pandemic response and recovery. And a lot of that because they realize that ASEAN was doing quite well in terms of the region in realizing that they can't isolate themselves as some countries have taken since the pandemic. So they were quite active in making sure they are upgrading, revising a lot of their initiatives. One of the more interesting bits I noticed as well was the fact that, well, they declared it, but we will only see it as a matter of time, was their review of how they want to implement the ASEAN Charter, like if there are any changes or any revisions they would like to see, especially in light of recent crises and developments around the world. And one of the other things, like economically as well, was the furthering of RCEP. How they want to push the regional comprehensive economic partnership and implementing dedicated secretariats to make sure that it will follow through. And as you've mentioned, both of you have mentioned in the beginning that a lot of major security issues have been brought up. They actually, unfortunately, did sideline quite a lot of the meeting as well, especially with the case of Myanmar and then the developments over in Taiwan.
Now, let's stick with the Taiwan issue, because that seems to be dividing all the nations here in Southeast Asia, right? What transpired there in the meeting, right? Because we also know that U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken and Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi were there as well.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. Like, it was quite the elephant in the room as well, because there were tensions and it was quite noticed. But there was quite a bit of a difference in that, because while both U.S. Secretary of State and the Chinese foreign minister did not meet, which is sometimes customary for a lot of these meetings. These other ministers would have side meetings. In this case, they didn't. In fact, Wang Yi did leave early for one of the dinners, and a lot of these, and the positions based on Taiwan was quite reflective, because Anthony Blinken was quite clear in the beginning, in one of a sideline meeting, that they emphasized that Washington did not want to escalate or did not want to push it, push their position. But at the same time, they want to make sure that their allies have been supported despite the military drills and exercises that the Chinese military have been showing. But at the same time, on the other hand, we have, of course, Wang Yi and the Russian foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, who did quite openly show their disapproval by walking out on sessions when other ministers have declared their position regarding Taiwan, which was the case when the Japanese minister was speaking.
So do we know how ASEAN is divided when it comes to this issue of Taiwan? Like, who is, you know, I would say maybe, is it a fair way of saying being maybe more pro-China?
Officially, they wouldn't be making any bold statements regarding Taiwan, because ASEAN as a whole does not recognize Taiwan.
Yes.
But at the same time, even if they did, I don't think they would be, it's not the case, rather, siding as well, because I feel like, except with explicit cases such as Cambodia, Myanmar, and Laos, they are noticeably more China-leaning in terms of partnerships and cooperation. But at the same time, Southeast Asia in general does prefer to not to choose sides. Some may call it indecisive, some may call it pragmatic. It really depends on how you want to look at it. Yeah, but in the most case, they try to make sure I would say they have considerable experience not to push the envelope too much when it comes to the situation.
But one theme that they definitely have pushed the envelope in, or at least have been considered decisive, is banning the Myanmar generals from ASEAN meetings or until they make progress on that 5-point consensus. In your assessment, how significant is this move?
It was quite a bold one, because it's exactly rightly put, because this is one of the few situations, especially in terms of security, that they are quite unanimous on. They were, with the exception of Myanmar, of course. It's quite a statement too, for Hun Sen as well, right in his opening statement, was to express the absolute what he calls absolute disappointment in the limited progress. It does push quite a lot, because it also makes them reassess of what measures do they have in ASEAN's institutional capacity to ensure the safety of those under the military rule. Mm-hmm. But the problem is with this, for quite a lot of these issues, is that one of ASEAN's biggest criticism was the lack of teeth they have for some issues, and the fact that they're enshrined in their principles of non-interference, especially on domestic issues, their respect for sovereignty and neutrality. So this ticks off quite a lot of the boxes that for some, like, they would still hang on to those to ensure that no criticism is put. But at the same time, if they can't enforce it, it can be quite disappointing, because it's only a matter of time to see whether they will follow through. Because a good example of this was, in the beginning, they were very vocal on to quote, a gross lack of will by the military administration. And even our own foreign minister, Saifuddin Abdullah, was quite has made a point on his platform to denounce these actions. But the problem is, despite these statements, the final communique does not express this. Mm. They've only mentioned that we are disappointed and we want to push for more efforts to peacefully resolving this issue and hoping that the Tatmadaw would actually respond in kind.
So in the past, right, people are looking to ASEAN to resolve this Myanmar crisis. Does it mean mm-hmm. that that's not happening on that front? And sorry, but you only have like 30 seconds left?
At the moment, I don't think a clear effort, clear signs we make headway, I think it's, this will be something of a long-term solution.
All right. Thank you very much. That was Iza Ibrahim, analyst at the Foreign Policy and Security Studies Program at ISIS Malaysia, giving us a wrap-up on the 55th Foreign Ministers Meeting in ASEAN, which is actually still currently taking place.
Yeah, I mean, I think the overshadowing issue is the Taiwan conflict that's taking place after Nancy Pelosi's visit last week. The question here is really what can ASEAN do, really? Because they don't acknowledge Taiwan.
Not only that, they just want to stay neutral as possible, right?
Friend.
Up next, we'll be speaking to Setaran Ellalingam of Deloitte on the recently announced online tax. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.